Earlham Sports.
Hello and welcome to the Verulam Sport Podcast. Every week, the team behind the award-winning Radio Verulam Sports Show will provide you with the most relevant news from the local and regional sporting scenes, whilst keeping you in the picture with national and international bulletins from the world of sport. There will be topical debates, regular interviews from local talent, and chats with those big-name guests that are a mainstay of Verulam Sport. As always, this is your show, every bit as much as it is ours. So, check out Verulam Sport across social media and get involved. For now, prepare yourself for this week's action-packed Verulam Sport Podcast. Hello and welcome again to Verulam Sport Podcasting. I'll tell you what, I've got to be on my best behaviour on this call because we are joined by legendary ex-Premier League referee, the eagle-eyed Roger East. He's also going to be in our neck of the woods in a few Saturdays' time for the awesome kick-off at 3 event. We'll build up to that. But for now, just want to say, welcome, Roger. How are you?
I'm very well indeed, thanks, Tony. You're very good. How about yourself?
I'm doing okay. I'm very mindful, Roger, that it's a surreal year we're all living through. And accordingly, I count my blessings. I think that's important. We forget sometimes how lucky we are, I think. But there we go.
Absolutely.
Anyway, Roger, delighted to spend a bit of time with you on this podcast. Fascinated to learn about your elite level career as a referee. What got you into this? It seems to me, as a ex kind of rugby guy, a bit of an unusual one to sort of choose to pick up the whistle. What inspired you?
Probably inspired me in the fact that I always fell foul of referees myself as a player. Mm-hmm. And a local referee said to me, "You really need to be a referee because you argue with him all the time." So that probably inspired me. I played local football, mm-hmm. Probably played up to a level where someone offered me a fiver to play. So at that point, I decided to become a qualified referee at about 21, 22 years old. Then carried on playing for 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. And then got to a stage where I had to choose between refereeing and playing to get promoted in refereeing terms. And thankfully, I chose the right route because I was never going to make it as a player. Fortunately, enjoyed a very enjoyable career as a referee.
It's fascinating stuff. It must be tough, though, because we'll talk about the culture of this in a little while. But everybody in the stadium's got their own views and they're all right, et cetera, et cetera. Does that just, after you've done it for a little while, just become water off a duck's back? Or how do you kind of zone out for some of the abuse that you must have suffered just by dint of having the temerity to be a referee?
I think in the end, you actually become, I wouldn't say immune to it. That's mm-hmm. the wrong expression. But you almost go into a game in a bubble. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, when you actually blow the whistle, it is simply 11 against 11 or mm-hmm. blues against reds or whoever it is. And you don't even think about the crowd. Mm. The crowd almost become an adrenaline rush to sort of spur you on to try and make the right decisions. Because trust me, when you don't make the right decisions, you get a bit more abuse.
I'll tell you, I don't envy you this or anybody, but I've got such admiration because people forget, don't they? Obviously, you were privileged and successful enough to do it right at the elite, literally at the Premier League level. But the grassroots, it's any sport. If there is no referee, there is no game. It is that simple, isn't it? And obviously, everybody, like I say, is an expert and everybody has a take on referees' decisions. But take out a referee, an umpire, whatever you want to call it in any given sport, there's no game. You're absolutely crucial to the lifeblood of sport, Roger, eh?
Of course. And I suppose at lower level, it's probably more difficult in the fact that everyone thinks you're wrong mm-hmm. and there's no way of proving that you're not wrong. Whereas I suppose the higher you go up, the more cameras there are. Mm-hmm. And actually, the majority of fans, despite disagreeing with you on the day, when they actually go home and watch it on Match of the Day, they realise that we got most things right.
Yes.
And there wasn't many things we got wrong. It was only a few things now and again, because we're human. But the level we operated, trust me, we got most things right.
Do you know what? I can well respect that. And I don't want to dwell on this. I feel as though I'm slightly open Pandora's box here, but it's kind of become appropriate. Because like you say, you are humans. There is that human error. But there's that old football cliche, isn't it, about swings and roundabouts and things kind of leveling them out. Now, I don't want to be a dinosaur and say that we shouldn't have technology enhancing and supporting referees. I think it now is just the way it is. But the thing that frustrates me about somebody as a bit of a more of a purist, if you would, is that I wouldn't mind at all if it was, in my eyes, enhancing that level of accuracy in the decision making. But certainly from the evidence of last season, VAR, et cetera, it didn't really feel as though that was the case. Again, Roger, I'd love, just quickly, your professional take on the role of technology and its support of referees now.
Well, there's probably two answers to that. Firstly, when you introduce a new system, new idea, new technology, there's always going to be a bedding in period. Mm-hmm. When everyone gets to a stage where they're happy with how you operate the system. So that's the first thing. And I think that's, whilst it's not quite there, it will get there because mm-hmm. it needs to get there. From a referee's point of view, I liken it to the fact that if you drive, I mean, I live in the south of England. If I drive 250 miles to Manchester and I referee and I make a mistake, I've got to drive 250 miles home, albeit not very happily because I've made a mistake. Because mm-hmm. trust me, we were very upset when we made a mistake. Mm-hmm. But also, if you turn the radio on, there's 1,500 people phoning into stations saying the referee got it wrong. So they remind you all the way home. Now, if you have the opportunity to stop that and change your decision and then drive home in peace and quiet, mm-hmm. listen to a bit of music, that's got to be good for a referee point of view.
No, I totally respect that. I can well embrace that. As you say, though, I do feel as though they're very much teething problems at the moment, and no doubt that will be ironed out. We talked about a little bit about the way you have the ability to just almost get used, accustomed to the atmosphere of the crowd. And again, it just becomes down to you're the man in the middle and the other teams going about their business. But I'm fascinated to learn, Roger. There's obviously a lot of characters, a lot of big egos, for want of a better word, in the Premier League. In your experience, who was the toughest person to referee? Maybe a captain or one of the kind of characters of the Premier League history. Who for you was always going to give you a tough task?
Well, I think a nice story, not to want to dwell on individual characters too much, but I always personally got on quite well with Troy Deeney. Mm. Now, Troy was a very volatile character, and I think that's a nice way of putting it. But he once said to me, Roger, he said, I like you. He said, because I can have an argument with you. I can shout at you. He said, you probably shout back at me. He said, but I always know when to stop. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, I said, well, how do you know when I need to stop? And he said, your face changes. Mm. And I suppose then I think that's almost respect from the player that they know how far they can push you. And I think that's the art of management at the top level. You have to know how to manage individual players. And whilst I would talk to Troy in one way, I wouldn't talk to a different character in the same way. And that's the art of man management.
I guess that art is the absolute key, isn't it, to refereeing? Because it's not so much about knowing the rules and the laws of the game. Obviously, that's vital. Couldn't do it without that. But that ability to understand the character, the human emotion that's at stake, must come into the decision-making process. Did you find that was something that you can only gain with experience? Or did you find that was a quality that you kind of had quite naturally?
I think when you come up through the system, each level you get to, you manage the players that you are given, shall we say. Mm-hmm. And then every step you go up, you have to have a different set to manage those players. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, if someone's paid a lot of money, you have to manage them in a different way. And if someone paid nothing at all, you have to manage them in a different way. Because they have different attitudes to what you're going to do. Because at lower level, maybe your decision is not going to be the million pound mm-hmm. decision. whereas obviously at the top level it is. And you have to manage that. And I think you learn to do that. And to survive, you have to learn to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think that, you know, whatever you think of people as referees, when you get to that level, you have to manage people. And that means you manage the clubs, you manage the players on the pitch, the guy that brings you a cup of tea, you manage them in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
To have the nicest day possible when you're there.
Absolutely fascinating. Roger, I mentioned earlier in this piece that I kind of grew up in a rugby culture, really. And I'm a little concerned for the game of rugby that their feigned respect for the referee is slowly being eroded. But that's another conversation for another day. Generally, though, one of the kind of beautiful elements of what they might refer to as the spirit of rugby is that it was only the captain who could dialogue with the referee. And if there was any over grief, there was always going to be mutterings and what have you. That's just human nature. But if there was any over grief, then it was just known and literally implied in mandated in the laws of the game that, well, you can moan all you want, but we're moving this now forwards 10 yards. So obviously that became counterproductive. There was a period where it seemed like football was trying to instill a similar culture, and I think there was that 10-yard aspect a few seasons back, but it never really flourished. Do you think that is something that football could consider embracing, and why do you think it didn't quite catch on?
I mean, I was refereeing when that happened, and remember that they changed it twice.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you could move 10 yards, and then you could move it into the penalty area, which didn't really work. Then they moved it so that you could only come outside the penalty area, mm-hmm. which sort of worked. But the one thing that I think they sort of missed the trick, if you like, mm-hmm. in my opinion, was that if you moved it forward, you had to caution someone.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me was almost counterproductive, because the actual the sin or the sort of, I suppose, the what hurt them most was moving mm-hmm. it forward.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had to caution people, you almost lost control as a referee. So I didn't agree with that particular bit personally.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what we were told to do, so that's what we did. And I think it didn't work for that reason. And maybe they'll revisit it one day. But I think in football, they found that if they put it right on the edge of the penalty area, it was actually harder to score from there, because
yes.
you have to get it up over the wall. So it would almost be that they're better off putting it 25 yards out so that the pre-kick specialist can put it in the top corner.
There's such different sports, such beautiful sports in their own right, but really interesting to get your lived experience through that experiment. As I've said, I've got such admiration for referees, umpires across all sports. Quite frankly, without them, there is no sport. It is that simple. I would love to get your take on this one, though, Roger. I don't know many, I'm sure there's a few, football-wise, ex-pros who become referees. Now, I loved your insights into the man management of the player and the club. And, you know, you did it at that Premier League elite level. But for me, a player is also going to be somebody who literally lives and breathes that, understands the player's perspective, and I think would be actually well-placed to grow into very good referees. Do you agree with that as a theory? And if so, do you think more should be done to encourage ex-pros down the refereeing route?
Well, I think they've tried on many times to encourage ex-pros to do it. And one or two have.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was a guy called Stephen Baines, I think it was, who got to the Football League level. But I think the problem is with players is that if you start the refereeing tree, shall we say,
mm-hmm.
you have to go out on a local park and referee for a few pound. It's very difficult for an ex-pro, especially if they were a well-paid ex-pro.
Absolutely.
To warrant going away for two weekends or two games a weekend. And I'm not saying refereeing or sport is all about money, but it's time.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's time away from family that they have mm-hmm. to do. They have to go to meetings and train, and the same as the player, for not really the same benefit. Mm-hmm. If you're then going to jettison them into a higher standard with money involved, then I think then you become 20,000 referees are very upset, and you probably will lose a lot of the grassroots level referees. So you have to be very careful not to upset the system.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's a way of doing it without upsetting the system, which is sad.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the players would have the attitude or the aptitude to want to do it that way. But I may be wrong, but that's my opinion.
No, I think it's a really good shout. And the thing is, the realities of these developing into the referee is much more challenging as you've lived and taken it to its nth degree. You can't, like you say, just retire and be given a whistle and be managing Man City, Man United at the next weekend. You know, you've got to learn your game inside and out. So, as I say, I totally respect the challenges there. What are the challenges, do you think, to encouraging more younger referees and maybe retaining referees? Because I know, I don't know the current exact statistics, but I know there has been a bit of a drift away. And as we've addressed and understand, they are so crucial. So, yeah, just your thoughts on cultivating younger referees and maybe more critically, retaining the crop that is already there going up the pyramid.
Well, I think from the FA's point of view, because obviously they're in charge with the referee development in the country. From my point of view, since I've retired, I've joined what they call the FA Corps,
mm-hmm.
Where we basically, I suppose, nurture the bright talents in the county. So each county does their nurturing, shall we say. And we have about half a dozen coaches in the southwest. Actually, I think we have 12. And then each of us have about five or six referees under our wing, where we would go and watch them as a coach,
mm-hmm.
Not as an assessor. We're not. I always say to my referees, I'm not interested in whether you got it right or wrong, but if you got it wrong, I'll tell you how to get it right next time. It's that sort of attitude.
It sounds like a mentor kind of relationship there.
It's like a mentor. It's basically you're there for a, I wouldn't say a shoulder to cry on, because we don't cry referees. You know, we get upset, we don't cry. And I think that's the thing. You're there for someone, and you're there to try and give the experience that you gained mm-hmm. in your career and help them along the way. And all the times that we, I would say, I think from any sport or any degree of life, when you fail, you probably learn more from it.
Mm.
And that's where you can pass on the valuable information that they need to move to the next game. So I think the FA do a lot. The counties certainly do.
Mm-hmm.
And we try and keep the youngsters, you know, important to us. Locally, we have a meeting in Salisbury where we try and encourage all the youngsters to come along. And I know last year, I think I spoke at the meeting and I think there was 40-odd referees there. And I think there was probably 20 that were less than 25.
That's really reassuring.
Really encouraging. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like that this issue has been identified, and through passionate people like yourself, Roger, with this kind of mentorship relationship in place, that it's already been reacted to. And that was so encouraging to hear that. But one of the great things, and I know you're a massive advocate for this, of sport across all of its forms, is it does unite communities. It does give that energy outlet, which perhaps otherwise could be challenged or channeled rather in less positive senses. And I know that is everything that Kickoff at 3 are all about. And we're excited because you're going to be on hand, keeping an eagle eye over proceedings for the next big Kickoff at 3 tournament in London Coney, September the 12th. Just quickly, talk to me about your understanding, having seen sport at that very highest level and obviously gone up the pyramids, of just how crucial it is for maybe in particular young people to engage in sport.
Well, I think sport is a fantastic way of people meeting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fantastic people of staying fit. And any sport you do, and Kickoff at 3 basically they raise awareness. And they raise valuable funds for people that are not privileged enough, promoting health and well-being to people. And from my point of view, having the luxury of my career, I love to give a bit back. And seeing the young kids, you know, playing in these competitions. I think the one on September the 12th is all sort of 14 to 16 year olds. They're from backgrounds where they may be vulnerable young people. And, you know, for want of an expression, may have been in trouble with the police. And I think this initiative really is trying to take them away from that and try and give them a meaning of life and looking at sport where you can relate to referees that have been to the top, shall we say, and hopefully give them an encouragement, not only to play the game, but maybe even become referees.
Absolutely. And I tell you what, there's going to also be some scouts around. So opportunities for talents to show what they're all about, as you say, entirely free to enter. Only a few days to do that. Five-a-side tournament, age 14 to 16. But it could be mixed teams as well. So, you know, no in barriers. That's what they are all about. It's about breaking down barriers and uniting communities. We've been a massive supporter of Kickoff at Three for some time. Love all the great work that Michael and Ashley and a whole heap of others have put in to creating this. We talk about respect, Roger. One thing that I think is really almost a bit of a signature of the Kickoff at Three events is the minute of silence before everything actually gets underway. I think that's a great idea. And, you know, again, from the perspective, you know, if you see it on YouTube, there's loads of videos available. It is kind of haunting, but I think it really sets the tone. Just quickly, your thoughts on that element and how ultimately the ethos is about mutual respect.
Well, I think I became involved in about 2018 when I did a local tournament in Wiltshire. And that aspect was quite eerie in some ways. And the fact that I think it makes you realise that there's a lot of people that have been unfortunate to lose people through illness or accidents or whatever, or knife crime. And I think it's quite humbling. And I think it focuses your mind on the day is about pleasure, the day is about sport, and the day is about giving something back to the community. And I think Kickoff at Three do that very well. And I think they foster positive sort of relationships, if you like, with the, not only the police, but the community in general to young people. And unless you get young people on board, then there can only be one way of them going, shall we say.
And that's not agree. And the thing is, for me, what I always massively appreciate is sometimes if you just turn on the news, there's such a feeling that, you know, the human race has just gone to hell and back, and it's just doom and gloom. It's COVID-19 and knife crime, this and that and the other. And I don't want to be churlish and dismiss the fact that these are prevalent parts of society in our 2020 world. I don't want to dismiss that. But what I think is crucial is that without any ego, and they're not alone in this, there's other great community projects doing things other than sports, but let's focus in on Kickoff at Three. With no ego, they are just providing opportunities for young people, uniting communities, and it is refreshing in a world where the initial sensation is that it's, well, we're just bombarded with negativity, I feel sometimes, and they are such a force for positive benefits, in my humble opinion. And I'd love just briefly your quick take on that.
Well, I think an event, and certainly on September the 12th, it's a free event for youngsters to come along, play football. And I think it's very important that girls are involved as well.
Absolutely.
To me, girls in football are very important. In fact, they're growing so much now. That you know, they got the girls' leagues, the women's leagues, and worldwide, they're very important to people. And I think that the thing with that is that also from a refereeing point of view is that there is no sexism, shall we say, in the fact that you're male or female to referee. And we need to get more women into the game as well. And I think for a young child, whether you're female or male, if you love football, then you can play and you can also referee. So from my point of view, that's one take on it. But as I say, I think I've done a few of these tournaments, and I think the wonderful thing is that everyone enjoys it. It's for the right reasons. And I think it can only be applauded what Ashley and Michael do to bring people together and give more of a community feel to it, which is great. I absolutely love it.
Absolutely. We second all of those motions and just give massive eternal respect and appreciation for the hard work, entirely voluntary, that everybody at Kickoff at Three do. Now, I know you listening, your ears are pricked up here because you want to be involved. It's entirely free to do so. So there's no barriers of cost. It's on our doorstep in London Colney's wonderful Landswick Leisure Centre on September the 12th. But September the 5th is the final day to register a team. So if you're age 14 to 16, get involved. It could be lads, ladies, a fusion team. Get involved and check out Kickoff at Three across all forms of social media. Tell you, I'm sometimes exhausted keeping up with Michael's endeavors on Twitter, just off the top of my head, but find them online as well, everywhere across social media. The website, www.kickoffat3.co.uk, www.kickoffat3.co.uk. Don't hesitate, get involved. And for now, Roger, I've got to tell you, I could talk to you all night. I've really appreciated your candor and your fascinating insights into the life of a high-level referee. As I say, make sure you are on your best behavior when you do sign up and get involved, because Roger's going to be on hand keeping his eyes over proceedings. But for now, tonight, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciated it.
Well, thank you very much. Can I just finish on one note? Because Michael will be very upset if I didn't mention it. October the 18th, there's a tournament, also a kickoff community tournament, instead of our end of year finale because of COVID. That will be at the Warren. So please, if you can't come to the 5th, then there's one on the 18th of October instead.
Hey, plenty in the diary. Well, keep involved. I really appreciate that, Roger. And as I say, just wish you and yours all the very best. Thank you for your time yet again.